Now, judging by last week, you guys will have lots to say because we're doing this together. So before we put any pictures up, we looked last week at the lady who I'm still convinced was reading, but you might have your own views on that, sitting in her chair. This week we're looking at something which is a little bit more obviously a story from the Bible. Going to look at a couple of pictures first, and then I'll do a reading. So if you wanted, oh dear, the stack of Bibles at the back. You obviously thought that last week you didn't need one, so you weren't going to need one, but that's fine. I'm happy to read you just a little bit. We're going to look first of all from a couple of pictures which are much, much older than the one that we're going to ponder on. So when these pictures go up, I don't want you to think, I've got to think of the thought on this picture, because we're going to go over two to start with. So the first one is this one. And this one is way, way back. So a guy called Dirk Bouts did this. It's part of a triptych. And so you've got sort of out of the window and further on that side, and you've got sort of city bit this side. But I put this one up because we're going way back to the 15th century with this. And there's some elements of symbolism and whatever, which they were really into at the time. So we've got our lady down here washing the feet of Jesus, tucked away in the corner, head under the table. I don't know about you, but I hope that she doesn't hit it when she gets up. I know, doesn't it? It makes you feel scary about the picture, don't you? You keep thinking, move back before you put your head up, which is not particularly helpful. But the focus very much on all of the reactions of these people. And Jesus doing his two-finger here, which is, you know, man and God bit, and it's the right hand of God. So we've got the symbolism of Jesus on the end. We've got the next disciple along who doesn't look particularly pleased about what's going on, do we? But then we've got these two disciples here, one of who's very, I will distance myself, and the other one, just in case the monk who, and, you know, in those days, the monks would either travel or they would have their own monk who was in the family and praying for them type thing. Just in case he hadn't noticed, he's pointing at the lady in the corner. So we've got all this symbolism that comes out in this one. And eventually we get down to the tiny little bit in the corner, which seems to be pretty insignificant as they're having their fish dinner. It must be Friday. So if we go to the next picture, which is extravagant, isn't it? It's just totally different. This is really opulent. And this picture, we're coming a bit nearer now. So this is the end of sort of 1590s to way through the 1600s. And we've got this as a series of religious pictures. So this guy, Nicholas Poussin, he did a series of seven pictures. And you can guess which one this comes in the list. So these are what he called them. Baptism, ordination, confirmation, penance, Eucharist, marriage, extreme unction. Oh, I don't know, what a lot of weirdos. So it's obviously not a baptism. It's not an ordination, it's not a confirmation, it's not a Eucharist. I guess it sort of could be. It's not a marriage, and it's not an extreme unction because I can't see anybody dead. So there again we have, right over in the corner on the left-hand side, he calls it penance. I find that really interesting. So this whole act of being together here with Jesus, the painter thinks that Mary is paying penance by washing the feet of Jesus, which I find interesting. Sorry, you can't discuss it because we haven't got to the picture I've chosen yet. So in case your heads are all going, oh, I really want to talk about that, you need to hold it for a moment. They're two very similar accounts of Jesus having his feet washed. With the one we're going to look at is much more of Jesus being anointed with oil. But the stories sort of tie together a little bit. On neither occasion, in the two pictures we've just looked at, are the onlookers very pleased. We have a woman who's done something outrageous, which is to take her hair down, because that's just not culturally what you should do. And she shouldn't be doing this, coming up and washing somebody's feet. So the whole thing is something that everybody is going to frown on. And pictures are quite emotive, aren't they? It's a bit like poetry. You know, you look at a picture and feelings rise up, and sometimes they're feelings that make you think, well, I'll pass by and move on to the next one, and sometimes their feelings make you linger. But there's always a mixture of feelings and thoughts as you look at pictures, and I think they are a bit like poetry, that you just sort of think life slows a little bit when you look at them. So I have picked a picture that is to do with Mary, and is to do with Mary, and this is the reading that I'm going to do, just a few verses. So I'm in John 12, but please sit, relax, and listen. I'm only going to read the first eight verses of John chapter 12. So 6 days before the Passover celebration, Jesus arrived in Bethany, the home of Lazarus, the man he had raised from the dead. A dinner was prepared in Jesus' honor. Martha served, and Lazarus was among those who ate with him. Then Mary took a 12-ounce jar of expensive perfume made from the essence of nard, and she anointed Jesus' feet with it, wiping his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance. But Judas Iscariot, the disciple who would soon betray him, said, "That perfume was worth a year's wages. It should have been sold and the money given to the poor." Not that he cared for the poor, he was a thief, and since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself. Jesus replied, "Leave her alone. She did this in preparation for my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me." So we're going to look at a house filled with perfume. And this is the picture that we're pondering today, which is distinctly different from the other ones. There's a few less people. There's not a lot of body in this either. You've only got a tiny bit. I love this painting. It's on my study wall, and every now and again I look at this painting. I could tell you loads and loads of things about why I love this painting, but as you're doing the talking, I'm only going to share just a few bits with you. This painting always makes me pause. Whenever I look at this, and it's sort of, I sit here, and another thing that makes me pause is the view from my window, which is the river. Not because I'm thinking, is it going to go over the top? But because it's always doing something. It's either going up or going down, and hopefully not going over the top. But that makes me pause, and then to the side of the window, amongst some other pictures, is this one. And it makes me pause. I think it's a slow painting. And I just sort of take that moment to breathe whenever I see it. There's an element of me thinking, this is a stop moment as I look. Time to ponder and give myself a little bit of entering into the moment. So I want you, as we're and you'll all put your hands up and say, I have something to say, because I know how wonderful you are. Otherwise, it's going to be a very quiet and lonely time for this morning. I'm hoping that you will be able to think, I'm entering into this moment as well. Because I feel it's almost a suspended in time moment, a sort of life in slow motion. It makes me feel as if I've come across something very private. And I'm introducing you into a private moment this morning, and a feeling of treading quietly so we don't disturb it. Having said that, I'm hoping that it will have stirred in you something that makes you think, this is how I feel about the photo, about the picture. And this is what I think about it. And any thoughts are welcome at all. Please don't think I've got to be super spiritual about it. Because, as you know, last time the thoughts all sort of wandered along, didn't they? And we sort of led as we went through. So, and they don't have to be joined up. So don't think, oh, the thread has moved on, I won't say anything. So have a moment to look, a moment to ponder, and hopefully then lots of moments to say, this is what I think about the picture. the picture, well, it's called, yeah, it's just that it depends, because there's more than one. As you can see, this one is the one with the fluorescent-y type jar, alabaster jar. The one which we've got now over here is the blue jar. So actually, he painted more than one. You can get it if you were to Google, for example, anointing Jesus' feet, washing Jesus' feet. It comes up on under a few. And even though I've been on to Wayne Fort's website to have a look, it doesn't always come up with exactly the same name, because he painted more than one. So it's a bit of a long answer to your very simple question, wasn't it? But I don't want you to go on and think, oh, that's funny, it's a different coloured pot. But he did do both. Okay. Have you had your slow moment? So what thoughts have you come up with on this picture?
Shows adoration.
Okay, so adoration. Okie doke. Does it show adoration that you think I'm part of that? Or does it show adoration that you're looking at?
So for me, I'm not just going to take it from this one, just this, although you're asking to do. When I looked at the other two, it kind of made me a bit annoyed, because I felt that, you know, it was like all these men kind of judging this one woman, or this woman being subjugated, like, you know, underneath the table and whatever. When I look at this one, you know, it does make me feel like sort of I'm reflecting. But then I thought about about myself and where I come from. I come from a family that was very much a matriarch, you know, so the women ruled. So I think, you know, like, that's why the first two pictures made me annoyed a little bit. But then it made me think about, we had I think prayer stations in the big hall. And there was one where we had to wash each other's feet. And I remember washing Peter's feet, you know, our Peter, our pastor. And the actual exercise of doing that was very humbling, was very... I wanted to cry after washing his feet. I don't know why, you know. but it was a really humbling experience, and it kind of made me think about that... You know, by subduing yourself, subjugation or whatever, there's something so very special that you can't really explain it, and it's not something that is easy to, you know, like coming from where I came from, to do that. But there's something really special and spiritual, and I don't know what. So that's a big thought. Sorry.
You're allowed big thoughts. We won't ask Peter to take his shoes and socks off and stand at the door in his bare feet, so that you can all ponder on that thought. So some subjugated. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that coming at it from a different cultural background brings out quite different thoughts from, I expect, some of the other people here. That was great.
Even though we know that this moment happened in a busy room, it was a very private moment.
I mean, I think that's why I showed you the other two pictures first, because that is one of the things with this, that I always think, I know there's other people there. But actually, this picture just cuts them all out, and suddenly their importance has gone. Anyone else?
Taking that into fact that there's such a busy room, she almost looks like she's trying to get as close as possible, pulling him in as close as she can, because she knows for well she can't stand up and embrace him. That's that moment of just, she's trying to get as much of him as close to her face as possible and just really feel the presence of him there, but doesn't feel honoured enough to stand up and do that physically in a hug.
I think you're right. The hand, this hand here, so which would be the left hand, looks as if it's holding on, doesn't it, for grim death. Nobody is going to take me away. So, yes. Yeah, I felt that. Wendy. I think what strikes me is that the woman is totally oblivious to anybody else who's in the room, and it's a moment of extreme intimacy.
Intimacy is definitely a word that I come up with, and I think she is. She has cut the world out, hasn't she? This is her own private moment. There is a stillness about it. We don't do that very often, do we? I don't know when you saw the picture come up, whether you had the sort of moments I have when I look across from my sometimes busy desk, and I just look at it, and there's something in me that goes, just slows my world for a moment.
If I didn't, if I hadn't heard what you said, that it was about Jesus having his feet washed, it makes me very angry. Yes, because it's submitting. Not being equal to, you know. But I do understand because of what you explained before. But just if I didn't have any background, I went to an art gallery and saw this, I would like it. No, it's not right.
Okay, that's interesting. So the context makes it okay and actually opens it up to being, well, the opposite in a way. Yeah, yeah.
Following on from that, as a bloke looking at that, I see that quite sensual. So she's got her eyes closed and she's obviously somewhere else. She's got very, very soft, luscious lips. She's got her nose is very prominent in the picture, and you know that the whole room is full of the smell. The hair is entangling in the feet and so on. So it's a very sensual picture. Now, we often sing in our worship about loving Jesus, and I often wonder if women, and I say wonder because I'm a middle-aged man, middle class, great, so I know nothing at all, as you know. but I wonder if women don't relate to Jesus in a different way to blokes do. Because when we sing about loving Jesus, do we do that in a different way? I know that there are different words used for love in the Greek. So, you know, then there's different ways of using that word in Greek. But I wonder if there's a whole different range of things that women are allowed to feel about Jesus, but men don't feel comfortable about that. So it's, to me, it's very, very sensual.
I won't do a hands up just to see, but I think that's a really valid point, that that women will look at this and perhaps, I don't know, feel more comfortable with this as an image. Are there any other men? I will come to you. Are there any other men who are brave enough to say, this is how it makes me feel?
No.
For me, I look at that picture and I see in that woman's face so much gratitude and love. And I see, like you say, you feel that calmness, that stillness. That it's like she's let go. She's let go of everything that was burdening her. And she's just so grateful for that. And I just... That just, I think for women, answering something that was said a little bit before, we can demonstrate that much more easily than men, because that's what we naturally do. We naturally nurture, we naturally encourage and express our feelings in this way. And to me, that is such gratitude and such relief. And she is totally unaware of anyone else. She just knows that she's had her burdens lifted.
Yes. It's interesting because it's raising up the difference in culture, and it's raising up the difference between genders of how we would look at the picture and approach it. And I think that's valid. And I'm guessing, you know, for me, I'm very much with you, but I fully understand that for guys, they might be thinking, oh, yeah, Daffers.
Well, I'm a woman and not a man, but I... but I find it very seductive and I feel very uncomfortable with it.
Right. Wow, uncomfortable with it. Is there anyone else who's along that? They're coming out now.
I felt uncomfortable with it because I couldn't understand it in the first place. Maybe it's something about me, but modern art I find difficult to understand because the anatomy is all wrong. And that makes me uncomfortable, and it takes me... I can understand the concept, but the anatomy is so wrong. The ankle bones are on the wrong way. Her head can't be on those shoulders, and that hand can't be in that position if her shoulders are there. And that makes me uncomfortable, as if she's broken apart.
Right.
And maybe that's the message. Well, maybe that's the message.
I think the thing with art is, isn't it, that there isn't necessarily the message. There's a whole combination of messages. I mean, I think you're right. You know, it is all a bit disjointed. You know, that head is incredibly big to go on those shoulders. There's a lot of things. And her nose is very big. But then something, or perhaps it's not, but I think her nose is very big, and there's something about that that makes me think, you know, is that saying something about the amount of perfume that she can smell, etc., etc.? So sometimes there's different messages in it, isn't there? But I'm sorry that, you know, the disjointedness has unsettled this morning. Yeah.
She's a broken woman.
Yeah. But that's lovely, isn't it, that it brings out that thought because of that. Hand was here, wasn't it? Then I'm coming back.
This picture for me, some people mention about eyes and big noses and quite highlighted all the features quite strong but soft at the same time. And I think it tells me, like, all my senses are here, like all of me is here. I just want to stay here and sort of rest, love, all mixed together.
Love that thought of I want to stay here. In a busy world, the fact that, you know, this has made you think, actually, this is a moment to pause, is great. Sorry, there was a hand. Yes, an obby.
Yeah, it was just following on, actually, from way back. You know, I think she's made up. I think she's got rouge on and, you know, all the lipstick and stuff. And there's that other story of the prostitute, well, Mary Magdalene, perhaps not prostitute, but anyway, so, we don't know who she is, but crying. So the perfume's perhaps not in the picture. So I got very confused going, well, actually, is it Mary? Well, the perfume says it may be, but actually, is it the other woman who is potentially a prostitute who comes in broken, made up? You know, and for me, I'm just a bit confused by the picture and... Yeah, and the other comment I was going to say was that the Jesus' feet would have been incredibly dirty and dusty and horrible, and it's probably, you know, the worst place that she could be. So, you know, it is a very sensual, intimate picture of brokenness at the, you know, serving the very sort of lowest of the low kind of place, really. Yeah.
Yes, if when Jesus got to the house of Mary and Martha, which is where this picture is depicting, hopefully they were good hosts and washed his feet, but I totally agree, they were most probably still a bit sweaty and smelly from the journey. And, yeah, so this one, because of the perfume bottle, is the Mary... Martha Lazarus one that I read. But yeah, I mean, you know, we have this idealized picture of Jesus, and the other two pictures gave us that, didn't they? That, you know, Jesus is immaculate, wears these wonderful clothes that always look as if they've just been laundered, whereas actually he trudged the streets, he would have been dirty, and Jesus was a man of blood, sweat and tears. But we don't like to think about that too much. The hand behind first, then I'm coming back. Deanna, you were first, and I'm back to you, John.
Thank you. So if this is Mary, the sister of Martha, and in a previous story where Martha was really busy attending, and she, the story says that she was at his feet. And in those days, they were waiting for the Messiah, and she knows this is him. And she knows that the one that they've been waiting for is finally here. And like that hand in that image at the back of his leg, it's like if she doesn't want to let him go. And as a woman, going back to those comments, I see Jesus as my husband. And obviously we don't see him as with a Eros or Eros love, but he is everything else that a husband can represent. So, of course, it is a passion there and a love that she just doesn't want to let go.
And we sing about Jesus being the lover of our soul, but sometimes it's uncomfortable to think of Jesus actually as lover. But, yeah, we're sisters in that one.
It's interesting, I think, that most of the comments so far have come from the ladies' side of the congregation. I would like to line myself up with what Mark was saying. It's very difficult, I think, for a man to grasp this. I think in regard to our relationship with Jesus, I think it is different. And I can't really explain it particularly, except that I struggle often. I mean, I'm no longer a middle-aged man. Twice that, I suppose. But it's still difficult. Always has been. But on the other hand, sitting looking at the picture, when I first saw it, I thought, well, this is all a bit odd. You know, I'm no great artistic lover or good critic. But the more I look at it, the more I see that sense of serenity in the middle of a hubbub. There's no recognition of what's going on around. It's just quiet, at peace. And I think that we can learn a lot from that, that our relationship with the Lord is, whether we're man or woman, it is one where we can be close to him and be at peace in his company. To where?
I just think it's interesting that the owner of the foot, who we know to be Jesus, keeps his foot there. And it seems to me that he's comfortable with himself, with even his sexuality, dare I say that, that he is recognizing this for exactly what it is. He sees the truth of the woman's embrace of his foot and the lavishness and the intimacy, and he's comfortable with that. And I think that's what we are robbed of when we enter into stuff that isn't good for us. And that destroys intimacy and truth between a man and a woman. And so I find it wonderful that he can enjoy it as a man and appreciate this woman and what she's doing for what it is. And that is groundbreaking and taboo breaking, because he is allowing a relationship between a man and a woman who are not married to still be something very wonderful. So I think it's very powerful that the foot is still there. He doesn't withdraw it in embarrassment. He allows it to go on.
That comes out very much, doesn't it, in the reading, that you know, when everybody else is saying this is dreadful and outrageous and the money could have been spent, etc., etc., that Jesus is saying, leave her alone. And, you know, this is all okay. And a moment of leave her alone, this is okay type feeling from Jesus makes it obviously okay.
I suddenly noticed that she's wearing white, and I wondered whether that was symbolic to do with it being pure.
That is a lovely thought, isn't it? That she has come to a point of knowing that this is all okay to be this close to Jesus. I mean, I appreciate, you know, it's Wayne's interpretation of the story, but I'm sure white is significant.
Dennis? I looking at the picture, I feel I've got to step back before that she is embracing his foot, because as a woman coming into a male-dominated room, and of the time, a woman would be counted very much as a second-class citizen, the courage of actually coming into that room and then allowing her extreme love and emotion to take his foot and bathe it in the perfume and to hold it so close to her actually tells us that perhaps we need to have more courage in stepping into the difficult side of our Christian life and show our emotion in telling other people how special Jesus is to us.
That's great, because we do struggle, don't we, sometimes with what we can say about Jesus to make Jesus, yes, accessible to other people, but to actually say this is how much Jesus means to me. I know it's unusual, but I actually have a bit that Wayne Fort has said about him painting. Not specifically this, but he has painted some other religious paintings. But this, and I'll read that to you in a moment. This picture, I mean, for me, you've covered lots of things that I had down thinking, I wonder if they'll think this and I wonder if they'll think that. I do feel a bit like an intruder into the scene, which I think brings out the sensual comments that have been made, that I feel as if I've invaded a moment of intimacy with Jesus. But then there's another bit of me thinking, actually, you know, I sort of want this. I want to be feeling that I can be so intimate with Jesus that it's all okay. And he's going to say to me, you know, don't stop her. She's okay here, which I think is really lovely. Her eyes are closed, and yes, it looks as if she does have makeup on, but her eyes are closed. It may just be his colour palette. And I have blocked out the world. And how often do I find a moment? And during Lent, you know, will there be those moments when perhaps I'll give up on a bit of a book or a bit of a television or a bit of something else to have that moment to close my eyes and say, let's just spend some time together. She's ended up smelling like Jesus, which I just think, whoa, isn't that a lovely feeling that as that story goes on, she can't help but have touched that perfume that she's put on. Nard was incredibly strong, well, is an incredibly strong perfume. Whether that was still the perfume that was on her when Jesus went to the cross, but this whole moment of anointing Jesus for going to the cross. So Wayne Fort says this. He says, I look at my art as a form of worship, forgetting myself, forgetting the end product, and just communicating with God on the canvas, talking to God almost like a prayer. I think that's when the best paintings have been done. A painting is a recording of a thought process, of a physical dance, but it can be perceived instantaneously. I spend a lot of time in prayer and worship in front of the canvas. And I sort of think, I can see that. that for him, that lovely phrase, which, you know, we talk about the Trinity as being the dance, don't we, sometimes, that a painting is a recording of a thought process of a physical dance. And the thought of him worshipping before his canvas, which I guess you don't very often get with an artist. They've got an idea and they sit down and they paint it. But for him, it has become an act of worship. As a prayer for us, I've got a bit of liturgy, but just before we do that, as a prayer for us today, I want to read this. It's a song, but we're not going to sing it. You may not know it, but if we can treat this very much as a prayer, as I just read this through. So here it is, my alabaster heart. I'm keeping nothing back from who you are. No hidden treasure veiled by key or lock. You're a lifetime worth of worship, and that's only just the start. Here it is, my every waking day,
the minutes, hours, the years of endless praise. For you're worthy far beyond all I could say. There's a lifetime of worship in the nuance of your names. Let it rise like incense, my whole life a fragrance. Every ounce here broken at your feet. Every breath an offering. My heart cries, these lungs sing. Over you, my worthy King of Kings. There it is, your alabaster cross. Giving all, you are for all I'm not. I can't believe that's the kind of king you are. How could I not bring a lifetime worth of worship to you, God? Let it rise like incense, my whole life a fragrance. Every ounce here broken at your feet. Every breath an offering. My heart cries, these lungs sing over you, my worthy King of Kings. Amen. We're going to end just before we sing the last song with a piece of liturgy that will come up. And if you want to say the words that are in blue, and I will say the ones that are in black. This comes from Psalm 91, and it's just been put in for something for us to finish with. So those who live in the shelter of the Most High, who find rest in the shadow of the Almighty, will say to the Lord, my refuge, my place of safety, he is my God, and I trust him. Those who call for help in times of trouble, who seek the strength to make it through another day, will say to the Lord, my refuge, my place of safety, he is my God, and I trust him. Those who wrestle to remain calm and compassionate as the world rages, who need courage to stand up for the truth, will say to the Lord, my refuge, my place of safety, he is my God, and I trust him. Those who live in fear, seeing only the terrors that surround them, who seek protection and security in their times of distress, will say to the Lord, my refuge, my place of safety, he is my God, and I trust him. Those who have found rescue and protection, who put their trust in God and call on the Lord, finding in him their salvation, will say to the Lord, my refuge, my place of safety, he is my God, and I will trust him. Those who live in the shelter of the Most High, who find rest in the shadow of the Almighty, will say to the Lord, my refuge, my place of safety, he is my God, and I will trust him. Our Lord and God, who is our living hope, and we're going to end with singing about that. Thank you. Amen.